I'm launching the recording. All right. Hello and welcome to The Last Standee, a board game podcast coming to you from three exciting countries across Europe. I am joined here today by Alessio.
Hello.
Fen.
Hello.
And I will be your host, Alexis. Today we'll be talking about the battle of the ESS Vanguard and...
Yeah, it's decidedly not battle-y.
Today we'll be talking about the battle of ESS Vanguard.
just ISS Vanguard. We'll get there.
It's ISS Van.
Today we'll be talking about the ESS Vanguard. But first we'll start by seeing how everyone is doing with the Standee catch up. So how have you been doing, Fen?
Alright. Enjoying the fact that, as I'm sure is the case in many places, spring has decided to turn up way earlier than it should do. The plants are going to really pay for that one when it they realise that spring is going on for forever. So that's a fun little snapshot of the world right now. Not as bad as apparently it is with my parents, who are still in the south of Wales, where it is full-blown spring there as far as all the plants are concerned. Despite the weather not being right for it itself. Beyond that, what's it called? Robinson Crusoe arrived. I got the update version, so I had to spend some time transferring all the old contents into the new box. I was a little bit disappointed to discover, first of all, that the plastic monkey was an add-on, which is fine, but it has a space in the tray whether you got it as an add-on or not.
Yeah,
so there's forever a space in the tray.
Yeah,
it just feels really kind of a bit dumb, but maybe they'll sell the plastic monkey separate later if I want to fill up the gap. But also, I was a bit disappointed to discover that there wasn't any triple-layered character boards to the three extra characters, which I think is the Sailor, the Something, and the Gamer. I know they're kind of like fun, non-essential, and they don't have miniatures either, but it felt weird that there wasn't anything to do with that, considering they're touting a complete condition. However, I did get the adventure book, and despite it not fitting in the box at all, I don't care, because it's gorgeous. It's really a nice improvement over the... previous like sheets they did,
and that pocket for the journal on the back is beautiful.
Yeah. No. They all folded up horribly. I'm sticking with my original full print, like half folded newspaper articles and full. So I've kept all of that because I looked at it. I was like, no, this is dick. And the way that they've done the upgrades, like do this achievement, which is cool. And then tear this bit out of the book and get this little tatty bit of paper with perforated edges that is just going to not even work very well. And also, finally, it's like a 90% insert, which is my category of insert that is like 90% really good and 10% absolutely awful. And the 10% really, really sucks. I love the game. The game is fantastic. I'm not sure if this edition is worth really worrying about beyond just picking it up in retail, get the retail version, or if you already have a version, stick with that. I feel a bit kind of like, I don't know. I can't see myself using all those plastic fort pieces they've given you to assemble your fort as you're going along. Again, the game, going back to it, I think the adventure book is phenomenally well done. It has subdivided all of the different scenarios into a bunch of various categories, like how difficult they are, how long they take to play, whether they're suitable for like family or, you know, for more older, mature gamers. for people who want a chill time, etc., etc. And that, I think, is really good. So it's been a mixed bag. And Seventh Citadel arrived as well. I am, that is like decidedly far back in me being able to get anywhere to playing it. I'm not looking forward to the fact that there is a 5-hour fetch or not, no, escort quest tutorial that is compulsory each time you play a new threat campaign. I know they learnt some stuff from what they did wrong with Seventh Continent, but if nobody likes escort quests, and a forced tutorial of that length for each time you start a new campaign feels off. So yeah, that's what I've been up to. Basically, dropping a couple of mini reviews of like initial impressions on some Kickstarter things that arrived. How about you, Alessio?
Oh, well, kind of like you, meaning that I received my Robinson Crusoe, but I just sorted the components because it's pretty big and intimidating, actually, because I didn't have the original game, so I'm learning from scratch. I have to say one thing positive about probably Paul Grogan and everything about the rulebook. Because I approached the board gaming hobby knowing that the worst manual you could ever see was the one from Robinson Crusoe. And at the moment, I can tell, I still have to play it in practice, so I don't know, but the new edition, I think I can say it's not the worst, by far, the worst manual I used to play, so... That is a good one.
That'll be interesting once you've played a bit for us to talk about. Because I come with a decade's worth of experience of playing Robinson Crusoe. So I don't remember finding the rulebook difficult. But compared to modern rulebooks, the old one is pretty stodgy and bad. So yeah, that'll be interesting to hear a fresh take from somebody who's just going into it right now.
Yeah, for instance, I'm someone who thinks that the Spirit Island manuals are terrible. They are full of exceptions and stuff, and I hate those things. But anyway, the problem with that is that I received the Seventh Citadel first, so I'm currently playing that, the kind of escort quest, the introductory scenario is a way kind of the starting tutorial island on Seven Continent, but I think there's improvement, but we will have time to talk about that, so we will give time to time. And after this, it looks like I'm receiving a lot of Kickstarter projects lately, so something unblocked, which is weird considering the rest of the stuff. And now I wanted to ask a question here. Did anybody receive their Black Knight here in Europe?
No, mine is somewhere around Denmark at the moment.
Yeah, Alexis, I know that you cannot talk about this, so just stay silent if you if you didn't receive it. Otherwise, bang on the table. Anyway, weird, because actually there are a lot of containers stuck in the Suez Canal, and that's it, basically. I am playing a lot of small card games these days. I think I reviewed a few for... I actually know I reviewed a few for The Last ND. And I'm currently in love with Rebel Princess, which is basically a version, parametric version of Hearts, the kind of solitary multiplayer game on the older version of Windows. And it's something fun that should deserve at least a mention. Other than that, I think even here, the spring actually is here since February. And the problem is that with heavy rains that are pouring down these days, the weather is a mess, there are flowers and everything everywhere.
Yeah, just a mess, yeah. Just like the video game.
Yeah, exactly. And speaking of video games, I will probably take a pause from board games for a while because I received Unicorn Overlord and it's a fun game. So at least for a while, I will be playing that one.
Oh, I forgot. I have just been playing the Calico video game.
Oh, Calico.
Oh, yeah. I've seen that pass by.
Yeah, it's got a interesting little story, which is a bunch of puzzle scenarios. So effectively, you just have to figure out how to solve the puzzle. They've gone for a really weird framing device. It's a world where cats are super important, and quilting and that makes sense. But there's like a huge war, and there's like tons of soldiers with quite a lot of them are clearly like disabled or maimed or disfigured. So I think there might be some kind of anti-war message. Well, there definitely is an anti-war message, but I haven't gotten too far into the story yet.
I would associate Calico with wars.
Yeah, I know, that's what I mean. There's like some kind of there's a like a loom as well, the factory mechanical loom, and I've encountered it once so far in the story, and people talk of it like it's some kind of ominous, awful thing as well. So it's very interesting, the story mode, but for the just the mechanics and everything, it's really well done.
Oh, that's good. One thing we should look at for so then. So what about you, Alexis?
I've been doing all right, except that I've been extremely tired with a lot of work on my plate recently.
That's weird. You got the intro basically right the first time, so...
I've received the Seven Citadel 2. I've played through about halfway through the first threat. I think that what I will do is record a snapshot of finishing the prologue tutorial and reuse that every time, because there's no real any reason to replay it. When I read that in the rule that you needed to redo the prologue every time, I found that very strange, because the game specifically comes with three different scenarios that are very separate, and it's kind of weird that you have to redo one of them.
It was a fourth of them. That was the moment I closed the book, put it in the box, and put the box lid back on and put it on the shelf and went, I'm just going to carry on working on ISS Vanguard, and then I'm going to play Robinson Crusoe and the Black Knight, and maybe I'll get the Seventh Citadel in a couple of months, because I'm probably going to snapshot as well. It just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, exactly. Unless there's something that I come with later into the current thread that I'm in that will change the prologue or affect it, or you know, do something time fucky or something, maybe, but that doesn't seem to be where the game is going so far, so we'll see.
I just remembered as well, I forgot to say, because it's been a while, I also played Primal Peril, Sleeping Gods for Primal Peril. It's actually like a quite nice little play in one or two evenings version of Sleeping Gods. And the upgrades from the original Sleeping Gods towards Distant Skies in the mechanics have genuinely improved the experience. I actually think Primal Peril is really good. If you're like, do I want to play Sleeping Gods or not? It's like, get this, and you can sit and play it solo or maybe with one other person. It's got rules for four player, but Sleeping Gods is like a one or two player game, let's be honest. It's really tight, it's really good, and I thoroughly enjoyed it, and I'm looking forward to playing it again because of it like gives you unlocks to play with future playthroughs, giving a little bit of that roguelite feel. So a brief review of thumbs up, the only issue being that once you play it, if you go to normal Sleeping Gods, you're going to be a bit disappointed because the mechanics are better in Primal Peril and Distant Skies.
That makes sense.
Yeah, that has to be said. Distant Skies is an improvement on everything except that it's short.
I want short. If they're going to make a... like the original Sleeping Gods is very...
Compact, yes.
Yeah, compact, and it's nice to complete the thing and go again. My only disappointment was that the hints that it was a time loop just never came to anything, which was a real shame, because it was like, ooh, it'd be really cool if it was a time loop that you gradually learnt more and more and had to improve on to finally escape. But that never manifested. That was my sadness with Sleeping Gods, that I think I can voice now. It's been out long enough, so suck it.
That would have been a very fun twist onto the game. All right. Well, On that note, I think that it is time to move on to ISS Vanguard, which is the game that Fenn is going to talk about today.
Yeah, so I got ISS Vanguard when the first wave delivered, whenever that was, I forget. And I played through a fair bit of it, and then I had to go back to playing Kingdom Death and a bunch of other bits and pieces. So I packed it away and kind of forgot about it until the two additional boxes arrived for Wave 2, and I was like, ooh, I really should go back to this. And I picked it up and looked at where I was, and I was like, I can't resume this. I've got, like, this, there's no way I can resume this campaign. So that's the first thing, is don't pause it for a long period, because, yeah, picking it back up again, you're like, I have no idea what's going on. So this is from the guys at Awakened Realms. Same people who've done Nemesis and Tainted Grail and Aetherfields. And if I was going to describe it, I would call it a 1-4 player Yahtzee deck construction, dungeon exploring, settlement management game, but with a sci-fi theme. And it's essentially two separate games that interface with each other. The first being this planet section, and the second being this ship section. And also it's tied together with a bunch of read paragraphs, you know, a paragraph book, a log book. But it can be run on an app, and I'll have a couple of words about that. Now, I'm going to try and skip over a lot of the mechanics, because this game has loads of them. But I'm not sure where we'll get to, because it's kind of like when you get to the dot, talking about how the sections work, it's very crunchy. There's a lot of details, and it's the Yahtzee bit, and it is interesting. So I'm also, at the end of this, I'm going to give a few tips for somebody who's starting out, because on the second replay, I used at least the knowledge I had and was more focused early on, and it's just paid off dividends. Like, it's really made the game a lot more engaging and enjoyable, because I can handle the frustrating attrition that it throws at you through the planet phase. So that's where we're going to start. The planet phase is the bulk of a game session. It's typically going to take between up to 2 to 4 hours, depending on number of players. Each player will take the role of a section, like exploring a given planet. You can run standalone missions. They've got some of those, I think they're called operations. Or you can play it in the campaign. First thing that happened, the tutorial will be a planet exploration. So you usually start these by having this little landing card that is in this fun, you've slotted into this little like scanner, and you have a side facing you which says pay X amount of energy, and as you pay, you slide the card up and up, and then once you've done and you've spent all the energy from your ship that you have available, you can afford, you get to flip the card over, and it gives you information about the planet you're on, which I think is kind of neat. It's fun to be able to plan a little bit ahead. It's a bit weird that if you return to the same planet, technically in the rules, you are supposed to have to rescan the whole thing all over again. I was like, I'm not doing that, because it's derived information. I already know what this card says. If I've scanned to X level, I'm just going to make a note of what scan level I've got. Because otherwise I could just write copious notes, you know, of the card as it is and replace it for memory. Anyway, then you'll load out your landing ship, giving it a few mods to help it either get in safely or give all the crew some extra benefits when they're on the planet. You'll pick your equipment. You'll set up your decks. Each section has their own special deck. And you'll set up your dice pools. They all have their own pool of three different coloured dice that do different stuff. And then you play the worst part of the entire game, which is Kingdom Death's hunt track in space, where what happens? You roll a dice, an 8-sided dice called the danger dice, and woo, something bad might happen. And it's fine as a form of attrition to get into the planet, but it is literally like, just do this 4 or 5 times or less. And while it's meant to be a punishment, and skipping it is the reward for building your lander correctly, it's not very fun most of the time. I've had a couple where it's been interesting, where you're making decisions about what you're doing, where you're going on the way in. That was more engaging, but normally I'm just roll a dice, spend some dice, roll a dice, lose some supplies. Okay, sure. Oh, roll a dice. See, nothing happened. That's great. So that's the worst part of the entire game by far, by miles. It's terrible. I actually think the game doesn't need it at all. You could have just had a log section that said the ride is on the way in is X dangerous. Do you have this on your lander? If not, you must pay these penalties. And that's
It's always bad game design whenever the option of just skipping part of it feels like the best option.
Yeah.
That's the case for the Kingdom Death Hunt Track 2.
It is. And so they've worked a bit to try and improve the Hunt Track, but it is, yeah, it is still the weakest part of that game also. Then once you're on the planet, you will put your landing ship in the landing zone. You will put all your four miniatures on the landing zone as well, one for each section. Technically, you can play with two or three sections, and officially playing solo, you're supposed to play just two sections. Don't do it. Do you know how bad it is? Four sections get between 70 and 75% more actions than two sections do.
Yeah, it doesn't scale, basically.
It doesn't. I don't understand why there isn't a two-section mode where the sections are like, this one's security and recon, and this one is engineering and science, and they have bigger dice pools, and they have special decks with more options on them, just to simulate, I've only got two people, but they do two jobs, just to get closer. Instead, you have to play all four sections, and that's exhausting as a single player. Solo, it's not bad, but it is a lot to take account of. And the reason for that is because on your turn, you get to do... It sounds straightforward. You pick somebody at the start marker, and then they start that round. And they do two things, and then the game does an event. But the thing is like, some of these are fine. Like, the planet board is a set of nodes which represent normally cards, and they have a little biome symbol telling you, hey, this is like got plants in it, or this has got water. And these can sometimes change. You'll put other cards on top of them, or and eventually you might reach a card that has a little flag on it that says, this one isn't going to change again. This is like the final state of this location. So you also have like connectors. So this is why I call it like a node-based sci-fi dungeon, because it's just like Darkest Dungeon in that you have a room and then you can move to another place and then you have another room. And while moving, you may have to pay some kind of penalty, like exhausting or spending a dice, which puts it in like the spent pool and you can't use it again without mechanics to refresh it. I don't dislike the travel mechanics, because they make recon super meaningful. Recon's, like, one of recon's big gimmicks is I go fast vroom vroom wherever I like around the map. I'll get to in the strategy section just how good recon is, but recon's the best section, like the most powerful section by far. They do everything, which is great and really helpful if you're playing with three sections, because you can keep two sections together and recon can handle everything else. But again, I'd still play four sections. You can rest, which is a way of getting your dice back. You can also do this like exertion, which is more like a dramatic form of rest that permanently costs you a dice that you'll lose for the rest of the mission. You can prepare, which is draw a card, and you can do like skill checks. Prepare also lets you roll dice as part of it. Skill checks is the big bulk of the thing, and that's why I've been kind of brushing over a lot of stuff, because this I want to talk about. Bit about in detail. So each section has their own pool of section dice. The dice come in three colours, and they come in a bunch of different categories and different focuses. So red dice will be around physical strength, defence and mining. Green dice are about xenobiology, compasses, exploration and biology. Blue dice are about computing, wrenches, like engineering work. Yep, and physics. And each class kind of has their own things that they care about with the cards. So engineering, for example, loves mining and engineering, obviously. Recon likes compasses and physical, the arm, the muscly arm. Security likes the muscly arm and the shield. And then science is like all about genetics, biology, and physics. And you'll notice computers and xenobiology, nobody's really focused in that. I'll talk about that in the strategy section, because you're going to have to think smart about how you're doing that. I went with a very focused approach, and it made a big difference. So you'll be like, I'm going to do a check. And you'll look at the card, and it'll say, like, explore this place. And it has next to it a bunch of rows with different colours. And green is kind of, that's the thing you're trying to do. Yellow is like an optional bonus, and red is like, bad. And also, sometimes there's a little exclamation point symbol, and that basically says, if you roll this symbol on your dice, it's called the accident, then go straight to the bad stuff. So that's kind of going bust on your rolls. And it's one of the interesting pieces of the test, is sometimes you look at a test and there's the only penalty for failing is just not doing anything. And sometimes it's like, ooh, if I fail this, something bad might happen, like somebody might get burnt or this thing might attack them and hurt them. And so it's a bit of push and pull. And you're really free to choose how many dice you want to use of your own. And others can assist you if they're in your sector by providing a dice. You're going to roll your dice, and you're going to play cards to modify the rolls, and other people, if they've assisted, can play a card. So that's where I kind of describe it as Yahtzee, because you're sort of trying to get a specific combination. And I like this mechanic a lot. It's exhausting to do repeatedly for around 1.5 to 2 hours across a mission across 4 sectors. So I can't play like more than one mission at a time. But it is very engaging and fun. And it's even more fun because as you complete stuff on missions, you'll get success tokens. And then at the end of the mission, you can spend success tokens to buy more dice. And that means you can like change your pool, because not only do you have like 3 different colours of dice, but you also have generic conversion dice, who they require the crew member's ability to convert into a symbol. So the crew member's focus matters. There are wild dice, which like half the time give you some wild symbols, your choice, and half the time give you an accident. So you don't want to throw them on tests that are accidents, because they're kind of a liability, but they have chances of you getting to do anything. So that's interesting. And then you have all the different specialty dice that are probably the most powerful, because they let you focus in specifically on what you want a section to do. And each section cares about certain dice because they're cards, they're section cards. The bottom half use those dice symbols for various effects, like drawing more cards or maybe finding discoveries, special weird things on planets that either progress the plot a bit, or you can spend them to research new technologies in the ship phase. So that's kind of it in a very brief nutshell. I've missed a lot on the planet side there, but essentially you will move through all of that with your characters trying to solve various different problems, and they have a mission goal that they're aiming for. Usually it's like set for specific for the planet. What's this weird thing about this planet? Let's find out. But if you're going back to a planet you've already explored, it might just be, hey, find some discoveries, have a look. Because the game lets you go back to planets again and again. Technically you can grind, which sometimes you might need to if there's a technology you desperately want, or you've had unfortunate and you need to level up a bunch of section crew members because some have died or something. The main ways the mission will end is either successfully with mission complete, and then you'll get to lift off and progress the story a bit, or at least the story of the planet. Hi, Pamsha. Distracting me. Or if somebody takes too many injuries, like 4, you're forced to emergency evac, which is like not great. It's a failed mission and morale's going to drop, etc., etc. So, before I go on to the ship section, Alessio, you've played this. How do you feel about this planet section?
Well, I think that you recapped it very nicely. One thing I have to say that I just have the base box because I'm playing the language edition, so I basically received it a couple of months ago, the base game, so I only have experience for that about that. the game, the planet section is actually the strongest part. There's probably a few things that I would do. Another forward is that I didn't finish the game, so I don't know if it gets better. But there is a bit of problem with the technologies you bring with you, because, for instance, there are a few things that feel superfluous. Like, I don't think I ever changed gear after at some point.
You do get very set in the equipment, but some pieces are obviously way better than others. Although things do get a bit better, I got a strategy section. I'll talk about how to handle equipment a bit there. But yeah, I do agree that there's like, I am always taking mobility equipment if I've got it.
Yeah, exactly. Basically, you try to just be as efficient as possible. I am playing solo because there's a lot of reading and jumping to sections and doing stuff. So basically, that's for the best. Otherwise, a planet exploration would take 3 or 4 hours. That way I can contain it in 2 hours and a half. And so I find every single bit fun and interesting. But when you go to some, then there's always something which doesn't click with the rest. For instance, there's a lot of gear, but you always stay with the same. I think I got the basic base. I think I never used the turret or something like that. Yeah, so that's basically it. I like it and I want to like it a bit more. But there is a bit of potential which gets a bit wasted. Like you said, the dice game is the most interesting part, and it's the fun part. And choosing the dice, because they have different faces in the same color, that's the fun part. But repeating it for 2 hours gets a bit of work.
It does get a bit, and especially because everything that the game itself is doing is essentially trying to either inflict injuries on you or make you expend and lose dice, which is like thematically great because it does cover the crew getting tired and running out of resources and everything. But it can also feel very frustrating, especially if the landing mission has been very random and shredded you on the way in. You're sort of like, okay, well, we're not going to do a lot here. We're going to have to come back shortly. So fair enough. But I do like I do like this phase. I just wish they'd figured out how to make it half the length of time it is. One of my role playing group, he's playing it 4 players, and it's literally like they show up and the mission is an evening, like a 4 to 5 hour evening, and they have a grand time, except for that one particular mission that occurs when it's time for the big initial plot beats to begin, not to give away what it is. He did that recently and he did not have a fun time. Whereas I came from the Kingdom Death perspective and I was like, I know what I'm doing here.
I'm used to it.
I'm used to it. Sorry, I already prepared for this. So it's interesting because for me, I brought it down. This is my favourite part of the game. This is the ship book. This is my reward for completing a mission. This is what I'm here for. I love this. So it's a folder that has an awaiting pocket where whenever you gain stuff, it'll tell you, put it in the awaiting. And so it sits there enticing you and being like, when you get to the relevant section, you're going to get to draw these cards and do stuff. And it represents all the management of the ship and the traveling around. It's the bit that I call reference to the settlement management phase. And it is really well done in that it doesn't have like much in the rule book because it is a rule book itself. It's got a bunch of pages and it tells you all the steps to follow. They're well laid and clear. Like the very first page is how to resume a saved game, which assumes that you are starting from here. Spoilers, my sessions always start at the landing period because I can leave it set up. And I'm like, I finish the mission and I'm like, I need to reward myself with this ship book. So I do the ship book and then stop when I'm ready to land again. The first thing you'll do is you have the bridge and it's got this bit that tells you how to generate your command pool, which is used to activate sections of the ship, and your energy, which is used to navigate around the map and scan planets, and your success pool, which is used to buy better dice. You do that when you've come back from a mission. And then you've got a pocket page of really small for the like American size cards, the mini cards. And that you slot in, like, your, here's your objective and your secondary objective, your current ship's tech level, how the morale on the ship. Very important to keep your morale high. Like, if your morale gets low, it can be a bit of a death spiral that's quite hard to get out of. And then you have a bunch of pockets for bridge upgrades, which is upgrades to the ship, that various different things that give you little bonuses or perhaps allow you to travel to places you couldn't before. After that, you have the star map section, which is where you have a little book that shows all the different systems you can visit. You spend energy to travel to different places and interact with different things. It's pretty self-explanatory. For the most part, you know what you're going to get, unless you're dealing with a location that says, go to logbook whatever, like logbook 69. Nice. I think the star map section's fine. It's like pretty functional and fine for a choose-your-own-adventure type thing. It has rules. If you you must end the given section with a landing mission coming in, and if you don't, you're going to lose morale and take a penalty, which is like pretty bad. I've never gotten in that situation. I've always been like, even if I just have to jump down for some like mission on a planet I've done before, like been to the planet before, I'm like, I'm going down. So I've covered that. But the bulk of it is this, all these facilities the ship's made up of. And the first thing that happens when you come back from a mission is actually you unload all of your discoveries. And you have a double page where you put the unique discoveries. And once you get a complete row of them, you get an extra little unlock for the ship. Which is really fun because it sort of encourages you to go back to a planet where you're like, I didn't get all the unique discoveries. I should go back and get this row complete. It drives a bit more exploration, and all of the unique things as well are kind of pretty cool to look at. They have interesting names and unusual bits and pieces. Then there's Med Bay, which is a bunch of, like, it's a really interesting way of using pocket pages. They're basically rows, and they go from left to right: critical injuries, moderate injuries, and light injuries. And the number of injuries you've taken, you'll slot your crew member when they come back from the mission into that spot. If they're in the critical injuries, you're going to have to make a survival check as well. They might die. But otherwise, they'll gradually heal, and you can assign more crew members. That's taking them from your ready pool and putting them into the resting pool. They can't go on the next mission. They can't do anything else. And heal a little bit to get them out of Med Bay a bit faster, which I thought, like, this is really quite fun, and it's a good way of forcing turnover, because even a light injury will knock you out for the next mission, which is like pretty good, although security suffers a bit because of it. The other facilities are research, where you'll take all of the new research projects you found and you'll slot them into these pocket pages that have a little pair of symbols on them to tell you what kind of specialties the crew members have to have in order to research that technology. But you also have to have the right discoveries and be able to pay those from your gathered discoveries. So you're encouraged gently to go and, like, check out planets and dig up discoveries, which is great, because that's science's thing, really, is getting leads for more discoveries. Production is a couple of, like, you get all these production projects, and as long as you have enough tech level, you slot them into these pair of production queues. You start with one, you can unlock the second one as you improve your technology. They're similar to Med Bay. And I found that also really fun, as you sort of, it goes, okay, put something in stage one, and the little pocket says it's 20% complete, and then you can assign people to shove it forwards, or you can let it naturally tick forwards over a number of turns. And then there's the barracks and situation room. The barracks is where you get five new recruits. You pick four of them, one for each section. And you can even use your rank threes to immediately skip rank one and go to rank two at the cost of having your rank three and the new rank two miss the next mission because they need to go and rest. And the situation room is where bad stuff's happened. You assign crew members with the right matching skills to the cards to resolve the situation. Otherwise, it's going to go in your awaiting pile and punish you at the start of the next ship phase. This is all pretty light and easy, but it's such a physical and visual experience that I really like it. I really, really like it. And I spoke with Martin a little bit in respect to Alien Transport Odyssey, and this plus Space Kraken has had them get interested in doing a folder like this. And one of my birds is doing a phone impression, if you can hear that. Anyway, this is my favourite part of the game. So, Alessio, do you have some thoughts on the ship book section?
Well, it's not properly a fault, but it's something I wanted to ask because I got this feeling that I actually love a lot of the mechanics. Like I said, there are a lot of individual mechanics which are beautiful, but there is this thing. I usually came back with a few discoveries, the unique discoveries. You are basically forced to bring them with you, so I have a little other stuff to get researched what I need or produced what I need. And since you use them as resources, if you are a completionist like me, or you really want some technology before you go to the next exploration, you will grind. But that's not necessarily bad. The thing which is weird is that I usually feel like I have no hint about what will I research will do. So probably playing like you with prior knowledge of the game, because you already went through it, or a part of it for a time, would help you focus probably, because there's a lot of places to go, and that's a lot.
Yeah, the first time I played around, I didn't feel that, because the side of the cards that do, like the front side before it reveals what they do, it tells you, like, it says whether they're like technology or advanced, and it has a little blurb bit that gives you some idea of what they're going to do, and then specifically it tells you what it grants. We're like, this one's going to give you a new lander, or this is going to be upgrade for your bridge or stuff. So I felt like I knew what I'm going for. The main thing here, it tends to be if you want to get resources, you often have to go back to a planet here and there to get a bit more. But science is super good at that, and I usually bring like maybe one or two unique discoveries back, and then three or four gathered ones. The main difficulty is being just when you're drawing the wrong stuff from the decks, like you're not getting the rare stuff. But the key thing is, nothing in these projects, if it's important, really important, it will be free. Otherwise, it's just, hey, it's nice to get this. So I've just always been kind of chill and relaxed about it. I unlock them when I can. If I can't, I do the most important thing, which is get more crew and recruits. So with all of this, I'm going to get onto a few tips for playing the game. Yeah. So first thing, crew members are super important. Obviously, you have to go on missions, but more than that, their abilities, their charge abilities are like the thing that changes the game, and they're not all created equal. The biggest is there are like four that are amazing. And there's about six or seven in the total pool, but alphas are absolutely just the best. Nothing comes close to them. They have an ability where you spend a charge and they can take a dice that's been assisted to them and put it on any side they like. Now, Recon has a thing called the live streaming rig that they get very early on, which lets people assist them from anywhere. So suddenly, you can just be like, hey, I got, you know, this thing that requires science. I don't do science, but you can guide me through it via the live stream rig. And if I roll badly on your dice, I'm just going to spend a charge and put it to the side it needs to be on. There are three alphas in the game. Put them all in Recon. That's the place to keep them. They are amazing at the job. Then there's Loader. There's only two loaders in the game. They have two charges and they can spend them to get pieces of small or personal equipment from the storage, from the armory. So they can just get what they need when they need it. Put them in security. Security's got heals and dice refreshes in their pool. And so suddenly, not only is security the punching bag for everything, they're also the medic. And it's just life-changing for them. And then there is forecasters. Forecasters have three charges. They can spend them to ignore all the text on an event card they've just drawn, basically telling the game, hi, that bad thing you want to do? No, you have to skip your turn. It's not happening. And that stops threats. That stops, like, bad things happening to make you sacrifice dice and everything. They're just incredible. So that's just like, I really like Searchers as well. They're able to turn three dead leads into a guaranteed discovery. It just goes draw a discovery from a deck that has three leads on top of it, even if they're all zeros. That's like, those are the primary ones. And I've been aggressively filtering through my crew to get them. I've got all three alphas now. I've got two of the loaders. I've got most of the searchers and the forecasters. And I've got some other like fairly decent abilities as well for who can like rotate in and out. I can't remember the names of all of them now. But yeah, basically those are like knockout amazing. So second thing, recruit. Constantly, because you need people. You need people to do get to work in the medical. You need people to push production through quickly. You need people to solve situations, and you need people to do research. You should be like grabbing people from the barracks every single turn until you have no sleeves left you can fill up. And even then, you may want to like dump a few and then pick again to try and get good abilities, because it's so much easier when you have a deep pool of characters to draw from to cover all the researches and cover the situations. It's just, that was my first couple of phases, was I was like, I remember last time I was a bit light on crew. I'm going to get a ton of crew this time. And it makes all the difference. Finally, the big one, dice pools. Be smart about it. Each and every sector has certain coloured dice that relate to their cards. So make sure they get the symbols that match that. For example, I feel like I'm going to tell you them all. So engineering wants pickaxes on their red and wrenches on their blue. And they can do whatever they like with their green. So I recommend xenobiology, because you don't have a xenobiology specialist. Engineers don't care about their green dice at all. They can use it to be one of your xenobiologist specialists. Security. Get them arms, get them shields. They don't care about the green and blue dice, so make them a xenobiology dice and computing dice. So when there's not threats going on, security can handle investigating new creatures, or they can handle computing work. Recon, they love their red dice, they want the arm, they want the compass. They're the only class that wants the compass. Give them all the compasses. And then get them also on computing on blue. And then science, just concentrate on physics and biology, and just give them generic red dice so they have some stuff to spend when the game asks for red dice. That is what I did aggressively from the start, and it made a world of difference, because I can look at the board and go, this needs these people, I'm sending these two there. And usually I have like security wandering around semi on their own, joining people when needed and acting as a medic or handling threats, being a punching bag. Recon is like solving the most important things as quickly as possible, because they're very mobile and they can do everything now they have the live streaming rig. And then science and engineering sort of flit around with each other, science concentrating on leads or handling stuff, and engineering providing like the shelter or doing mostly equipment-based things, moving them around. Last of all, the zip line's amazing. Just ridiculously good. I've lionized a lot of time here and we're a bit short on it, so I'm going to wrap it up there. I'm going to say, as two recommendations, if you like what you've heard here but you're not sure about it, Space Kraken is doing all the ship book stuff. I've played the demo version, I'm waiting for the full version to arrive. It's really, really good, incredibly enjoyable, a smaller footprint, cheaper price. And if you like the idea of adventuring around, but you want a different board miniature combat phase, Aeon Trespass Odyssey has a lot in common when it comes to settlement management, but does have exploring, I think better exploring, and has a boss battling combat system instead. So that's two parallels that I could recommend. And finally, Isis Vanguard is so much better than Aether Fields and Tainted Grail. It is not even close.
I want to spend a word about not Etherfields but Tainted Grail. Actually, there's a lot of merit in the diplomacy and combat system of Tainted Grail, but besides that, the story is I think is laid out better in ISS Vanguard, and the rest of the game as this thing that it doesn't drag like the end of Dented Grail. It possibly drags in the middle, because I cannot say the game is always all planets are equally interesting, okay, or are moving the same parts of the campaign, but it's way less a core to do than Tainted Grail. So yeah.
All right, thank you, Alessio. ESS Vanguard reminds me a lot of a lot of small bits of other Awakened Realms games, but it seems that it's managed to pull the best bits of it. And I think that's what Awakened Realms is kind of good for, is that they manage to pull a lot of different elements and gameplay ideas from different games and make something fresh every time. Even though I didn't like Everfield and only kind of liked Tainted Grail, this one seems to be very, very fun.
All have something very good for them, but Awakened Realms does this kind of big bloat, and you have to embrace the bloat, because all the games, even this one, are perfectible, but embrace the bloat. So that's
Speaking of bloat, I'm gonna say don't bother with the miniatures expansion at all. Like really not worth it.
Yeah, Awakened Realms, it never really is.
Yeah, Nemesis is the only one of the games where the miniatures really are like important, because they're moving around a lot. But then,
and they are included in the game. There's not separate expansion. Yeah,
but the Planetoid book is not big enough. Really, it's like. The spaces are too, because they're card size, you often have to have like the models all hang around the outside so you can still read the text in the middle. So I think the standees are better. I will say the crew upgrade system, it's not a lot extra, but it is actually kind of fun. Essentially, each crew member, when they reach rank 2, they get a separate upgrade card. Yeah. And it has like, if you do this, or during a mission, then they'll upgrade and you get a veteran version. And all they get is an extra separate conversion ability, so a new skill. But it gives you a little bit more. It has some log text to characterize the characters. And I really enjoyed it. Although I will say some of them are so easy to do, and some of them are like a nightmare. One of the loaders, Waylon, is literally like, use your ability twice. Boom. Yeah, so a bit of a soft recommendation for that one if you've got a little bit spare for it, because I think it's fun. I will say the writing in all of this is good. It's punchy, it's short, and the app is really well voice acted. My only problems with the app is it gobbles up the battery life. It doesn't rotate. If the phone powers off, the Bluetooth disables and you have to disconnect and reconnect the Bluetooth. And it does, and it doesn't have an audit trail, so I still have to have the book around to reread a log section if I need to re-reference some material. But it is, it's just the right length of text. It's always never too long, and the voice acting is phenomenal. So I definitely recommend the app.
Yeah, I played with the app. It's immersive. Yeah.
All right. Well, good to know. That's unfortunately all that we have time for this episode. A bit of a shorter one this time. But you can catch us over at patreon.com/thelastandee with 2e. Or on... Are we on Blue Sky? I don't think we're on Blue Sky. What, on Patreon or Discord.
Yeah.
I'm on Blue Sky and Threads, but I keep forgetting they exist. The same. As with the platform formerly known as Twitter.
So... Until next time, we have been The Last Standee. It's going to be a goodbye from Alessio.
Bye-bye.
From Fen.
Goodbye, hey-do.
And myself. But remember that the second E in Standee stands for exploration.
Enterprise.
I'm pretty sure we've done exploration, but...
Okay. Exploration 2. Electric
Exploration.
Boogaloo.
Exactly.
Yeah.